Chapter 4. Zara. Standing in a small room down the hall from the High Magus's office, Evoker Laramie places his hand on a unique stone column made from black onyx, streaked with crimson red. I've been here once before with the High Magus, on my first full day as a mage. Channeling source energy, he ignites the artifice within, and the doors of the lift slide open and reveal a hollow cylinder. He gestures for me to enter first, then follows me inside, letting the doors slide closed behind him. A platform of pure magic shimmers and forms beneath our feet. Now that we are in the privacy of the lift, he explains why he has brought me here. The High Magus put me in charge of researching what is happening to the Heart of Light. My eyes light up at this news. She definitely knows her mage's abilities well. He nods as the platform carries us upward, but his expression is humble. The High Magus selected me for my knowledge of artifice, he says, clasping his hands behind his back. She seemed hopeful that where other mages have failed, a scholar might succeed. A wise woman, I replied genuinely. You do know more about artifice than anyone I've ever met. Bah, he says, shaking his head. You exaggerate. Still, I am grateful for the opportunity to work on such a high-profile project. It's nice to take a break from academia every once in a while. He winks at me from behind his spectacles. My stomach lurches as the lift comes to a stop, and I watch in wonder as the doors open once more, revealing the massive domed chamber at the pinnacle of the Pillar of Radiance. As we step out onto the viewing deck, I marvel at the great floating source crystal, known as the Heart of Light. Its smooth, multifaceted surface glimmers with an otherworldly light, even as it shoots radiant magic through the oculus at the top of the ceiling, fueling the arc. It's quite a sight, isn't it? Laramie asks, noting my stunned expression. Even after seeing it 100 times, it still feels magnificent. Yes, I agree, eyes still transfixed on the heart. Magnificent. Even though this isn't my first time seeing it, I can't help but stare at it in awe. We stand there for a moment, gazing up at the floating crystal, before Laramie guides me down the steps to the main floor. The group of mages who were present the first time I was here has grown. Their faces are lined with concern, and some even look haggard and worn. Their actions are more intent as they furiously write, while periodically glancing up from their notebooks. They barely notice our presence, though a couple of mages nod at Evoker Laramie and quickly resume their work. The strange instruments from before have been joined by a greater assortment of unfamiliar ones, none of which I remotely recognize. This is where we've been conducting the majority of our research, he says, gesturing to the wide chamber around us. Tables and desks are now set up around the Heart of Light, and every available surface is piled high with copious amounts of parchment and books. We have mages here at all hours of the day, trying to discern what could be causing it to fail. I look over at Laramie curiously. Have there been any breakthroughs? He strokes his short white beard. Nothing conclusive yet, no. There are theories, though, some more plausible than others. And what do you think? I ask. He frowns, staring up at the enormous artifice. If you ask me, I'd attribute the Ark's gradual decline to something called artificial attrition. Have you heard of it? I shake my head. It's the natural wearing down of an artifice over time, he explains, continuing to stroke his beard thoughtfully. When an inanimate object is imbued with radiant magic, it has a life cycle, like anything in the natural realm. Things break down over time, and artifices are no exception. The Heart of Light is an extraordinary feat of magical engineering, certainly, but it cannot last forever. We wrongly assumed that it would happen sometime in the greater future. I certainly never anticipated that it would happen in my lifetime. After 1,000 years, it seems that its intended function is beginning to die out. Interesting, I reply, looking away from him and back up to the crystal. But I thought the heart was blessed by the light to protect us for eternity? That's what the church teaches anyway.
Perhaps it is, he concedes, though his tone suggests that he doesn't believe it. However, I think it's more likely that over the centuries mankind has attributed special religious significance to the Ark of Radiance, forgetting that in the beginning it was created by man to protect man. It is unlikely that the light was involved at all.
Oh, I say, troubled by the insignificance of religious influence in his theory. Could it be possible that the Heart of Light is failing because of something so mundane?
Nothing lasts forever, he says softly, as if reading my thoughts.
We stand there for a moment in silence, pondering the fate of our world, should the Ark truly fail. The mages surrounding us continue to observe the artifice, scratching down notes and whispering to one another in hushed tones. The constant droning thrum of the magic seems to rumble the very stones of the chamber, filling my ears with a strangely comforting background noise. Is yours the prevailing theory? I ask at length, glancing back over at Laramie. Do most mages believe that the failure is natural and not due to sabotage?
It is, he replies, once more clasping his hands behind his back. At least among my associates. Though it is not as popular with the rest of the conclave as you might think.
What do you mean?
Oftentimes, the simplest explanations require the greatest amount of work, he clarifies. There are those within this tower that are content to believe that the failure is due to some evil plot, and that it can be solved by finding the people responsible and simply stopping them. It takes the responsibility out of their hands, you see.
I frown, but allow him to continue without interruption.
If artificial attrition is the cause, he goes on, then that would mean we have greater problems than a simple cult of bloodthirsty assassins. It would mean that we must either fix the heart or construct a new artifice entirely. The older you get, Zara, the more you will find that most people are afraid of the truth. They are perfectly content to believe in convenient lies.
Still, some things bother me about all of this, and I can't help but ask what I see are obvious questions. Why wasn't some form of a backup plan put into effect? It seems that if this were a possibility, then someone would have come up with something to prevent the end of the world from occurring. Also, what's causing it to degrade so rapidly? Could there still be some sort of outside force working against us? Or is the natural failure of the artifice causing some sort of chain reaction? He holds up his hands, as if to block my assaulting inquiries.
One question at a time, young mage, he chuckles. Your inquisitive mind is nimbler than mine, I fear.
He ponders for a moment before answering, his brows furrowed in thought.
I'd like to blame the lack of an alternate plan on the gross miscalculations on the part of our forebears, though I suspect it has more to do with our own complacency. We've grown comfortable in Tarsinium and left the burden for future generations to solve, assuming that peace and prosperity would last forever.
He pauses again before continuing, his frown deepening.
As for your other questions, I'm not entirely sure. Even after centuries of using talismans, We still know precious little about source crystals. I know that the records indicate that the early conclave searched the length and breadth of the kingdom for alternate source crystals, large enough to replace the heart, though their searches eventually proved futile. Time erased all memory of the R'lar, and we became consumed with our own petty squabbles. The conclave, instead of looking outward at the threats beyond, turned its attention inward and began tinkering with far less important things. He shakes his head. It's a sad reality, but human nature never changes, it seems. We could have learned from our history. Otherwise, what is the point in learning about it? The weight of his implications settles heavily on my mind. My next question, though another obvious one, seems like the most important of all. How long do you think we have before it completely fails? His face clouds over with something mirroring discouragement. He answers, at most, a few years. At the very least, no more than a few months. But as of right now, we are still unsure. I don't reply, instead letting his words sink in. Light. A few months, I think, feeling a twinge of hopelessness. This is a dire problem indeed, though I still find it hard to believe that most mages would refuse to fix the problem while the world crumbles down around them. After a minute, Laramie speaks in his soft, grandfatherly voice, his expression becoming hopeful once more. We are getting closer to proving my theory to be true. Fortunately, if I am correct, then we will be one step nearer to actually doing something about it. Problems like these are much easier to solve when you understand the why behind them. Perhaps there is a way to rejuvenate the heart after all. We won't know until we try. I turn to face him, fixing my former professor with a serious expression. If you don't mind me asking, why did you bring me here? Other than discussing the current state of the heart, it seems like a rather strange place to take me on a simple walk. He gives me a small smile, then gestures for us to ascend the steps up to the viewing platform, probably so our conversation will not disturb the other mages. Once we reach the landing, he pauses and gives me a curious look. You're extraordinarily bright, Zara. One of the best students I've ever taught. Even so, it is highly unusual for one so young to be raised to full mage, let alone to the office of seeker. It means that you're special. I raise a questioning eyebrow at him. He said that word with such a strange tone. Special? I repeat, confused. Yes, he replies, nodding. High Magus Holden has taken a liking to you, and in the short time you have been a mage, you've accomplished much. He briefly looks away, letting out a tired-sounding sigh before continuing. I'll admit, I didn't invite you here simply for the pleasure of your company. I would like to ask for your help. My help? I ask, suddenly feeling uneasy. Indeed, he says, casting his eyes up at the oculus above, where the solid beam of radiant light shoots into the sky. There are a lot of politics within the conclave, more than anyone would care to admit, and unfortunately the circle is split on how the Ark's failing should be addressed. I find myself in need of allies here, especially when it comes time for me to submit a solution. If we ever find one. He looks back at me, and for a moment I can see a deeply troubled concern behind his spectacled eyes. I'm a scholar, Zara, not a politician. I find myself woefully ill-equipped to be able to convince the High Magus and certain members of the Circle to agree on anything, let alone something of this magnitude. What are you suggesting? I ask. When I go to present my case to the circle, can I count on you to help sway them in my favor? I know that you have the ear of the High Magus and several of the Magisters. Your support may go a long way toward ensuring that my proposal gets passed. Without hesitating, I respond, Yes, yes, of course, Laramie. I'd be happy to help in any way I can. He smiles warmly, and I can see some of the tension leave his shoulders.
Thank you, Seeker.
I make a face at him. I have one condition, though. You mustn't call me Seeker ever again. It's much too formal. Just Zara is fine. He chuckles and pats my shoulder.
You must forgive an old man his habits.
The Conclave is a place of formalities.
But of course, young one, I accept your terms.
We chat for a few minutes longer about small things, our conversation turning away from such dire topics. He asks about me and what I think about living at the Conclave, and offers a willing ear should I need to talk to someone about my problems. I thank the old professor, then reluctantly bid him farewell, citing my desire to find some rest after a long day. He agrees, then embraces me like a proud father, offering me a kindly smile as I depart alone for the lift. The ride to the middle levels passes slowly, and I find myself pondering the things Laramie and I had discussed. I'd felt so much hope in Forest Hill after we defeated Moloch and his horde, but that hope seems to be dwindling at every turn, from assassins to cultists, demons who want our complete annihilation, politics, a failing arc that could deliver us right into the enemy's hands, rangers who just leave. That last thought catches me by surprise, and I quickly put it out of my mind, knowing it doesn't even come close to relevantly stacking up next to all the other problems facing us. How does it make sense for me, still a youth, to hold so much clout in the circle? Mages who were once my superiors now ask for my aid, and are suddenly interested in my opinions about vastly complicated issues. All Behalia seems to have turned upside down. I exit the lift and make my way to the sky bridge that connects the Pillar of Radiance to the Azure Tower, where my quiet rooms await me. An eternity seems to have passed since I've been able to relax, and I find myself looking forward to taking a warm bath and turning in early for the night. Ever since the assassination attempt on the High Magus's life, things at the Conclave have stayed rather volatile. Between constant meetings with members of the Circle and investigations into the Harbinger's secret plot, it feels like I haven't had a single moment to myself. Only now, after 2 weeks, things have started to calm down. The Harbingers seemed to disappear overnight, and conversations have turned back to restoring the Ark of Radiance to its former power. Perhaps I can return to my research and studies in the library instead of trying to root out assassins from every shadow. Though it is still sunny as I cross the sky bridge, the crisp autumn winds buffet me and cause my robes to whip about. By the time I make it across, I'm sniffling from the cold. Summer felt like it passed by in a blur, I think, as I enter the double doors and begin climbing a flight of stairs to my rooms. Light, I don't think I'm ready for winter. The narrow staircase twists upward, but I climb it in short order, making it to my room in just a few minutes. As I walk down the hall, however, I notice something strange sticking out from beneath the door to my apartment. Approaching the door, I bend down and pick up a note of folded parchment, sealed with a red daub of wax, bearing the king's insignia. Breaking the seal, I read the words penned neatly within. Magus Zara Denel, King Gregor Æthelgar, Lord Regent of Tarsus and High Ruler of Tarsinium, requests your presence in his court 3 days hence.
He is desirous to learn more of your recent exploits, and is anxious to protect his kingdom from the encroaching demonic threat that has been brought to his attention by way of the conclave. You will be testifying before His Majesty and the court in concurrence with the ranger's apprentice, Owen Lund, to inform the king about your experiences in the Emberwoods, as well as the current situation with the traitors, known as the Harbingers. Court will be held at the mid-morning bell. Please arrive early, in order that you may be briefed by the royal attendants. Layla Olson, head stewardess. Folding the letter closed, I push open the door and step inside, a wash of different emotions coming over me. The anxiety I feel at being called to testify before the king is far overshadowed by the nervous excitement I feel at seeing Owen again. "He's coming back," I think, heart fluttering as I scan the letter again. "Oh, light! He's actually coming back!" A genuine smile graces my lips for the first time in weeks, and I immediately make my way over to my wardrobe. "I have 3 days," I mutter to myself, while grinning like a fool. Hopefully that will be enough time to pick out a decent outfit and figure out what on Behalia I'm going to say to him.